From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. In New Hampshire and eight other states, the arguments heard on same-sex marriage before the U.S. Supreme Court this week are familiar. These nine states, plus the District of Columbia, already have gay marriage on their books, and so they've been through these debates before. New Hampshire's path was unique as the first state where the legislature decided the matter instead of through the courts or by a voter referendum. Lawmakers here approved civil unions in 2007, and just 2 years later, after several super close votes and lots of political maneuvering, the legislature passed a gay marriage bill, which Governor Lynch signed into law. The statute survived a repeal attempt last year. In fact, it wasn't even close, losing by almost 100 votes in the House, which was then dominated by Republicans. Now, with the nation focused on two Supreme Court cases, Granite State supporters of same-sex marriage hope the court will enshrine it at the federal level, while those dismayed by New Hampshire's law hope this remains a states' rights issue, and those 31 states where marriage is defined as between a man and a woman can keep that definition. Today in The Exchange, it's a Granite State take on the Supreme Court arguments heard this week on same-sex marriage. We'll hear from local people involved in this issue, and let's hear from you, too. What's going through your mind, given the Supreme Court cases and given New Hampshire's own history on this issue? What outcome do you hope to see from these cases? What impact do you think it might have nationwide? Give us a call, the exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us a short email if you'd like, exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. exchange@nhpr.org again is the email address. We have three guests with us. Joining us by phone from Portsmouth is Jim Splain, former Democratic state representative and senator from Portsmouth. In 2009, Jim Splain was primary sponsor of House Bill 436, which legalized same-sex marriage in New Hampshire. And Jim Splain, welcome back. Good to have you.
Nice to be here with you.
Also with us in studio, David Bates, former Republican representative from Windham. He was primary sponsor of the 2012 bill that I mentioned, which would return New Hampshire to traditional marriage. And David Bates, good to see you too, and welcome back to you.
Thank you, Laura. It's a pleasure to be here again.
Also with us, John Graby, professor at the UNH School of Law, where he teaches constitutional law, among other subjects. And John Graby, welcome back.
Thank you, Laura.
Please. Well, and I want to turn to you first, Professor Graby, very briefly, before we get to Jim Splain and David Bates. Just remind us, if you could, what these two cases before the court are about this week. Yesterday, it was Proposition 8. Just what's at the core of that case?
Proposition 8 sought to undo a California Supreme Court decision, which said that under Constitution, same-sex couples are entitled to be married. Proposition 8 was a ballot initiative, and it was adopted, and it sought to amend the Constitution. It was challenged, and a federal district judge in California struck it down as unconstitutional under two different doctrines, the Equal Protection Doctrine and also as violative of the fundamental right to marry. The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals upheld that decision on somewhat narrower grounds, and that's the case that was argued yesterday before the Supreme Court. The second case, the Windsor case that's going to be argued today, involves Section 3 of a federal statute known as the Defense of Marriage Act, or DOMA. Section 3 defines for federal purposes marriage as marriage only between a man and a woman, and thus does not recognize same-sex marriages even in those states where they are legal. And a variety of federal benefits are therefore withheld from couples who are legally married in the states where they married.
So which of these two cases, Professor Graby, has more implications for New Hampshire, given that we're already a same-sex marriage state?
Well, it's hard to know. I was thinking about that on the way in this morning, and I don't know what the implications are so much for New Hampshire. I mean, what New Hampshire has done is clearly within its prerogative. I mean, nobody is arguing in these cases that the states are not able to recognize same-sex marriages. For that to happen, I think there would have to be a national constitutional amendment. And you know, that's not at issue in these cases at all. So I think New Hampshire is interested, but interested in the way that all states are interested, because one possible outcome, although it didn't seem likely based on the arguments yesterday, one possible outcome would be that same-sex marriage would be ruled to be mandatory nationally, that all the states would have to marry same-sex couples. That is a possibility, but not a probability.
And one more question for you, and then I want to get to our other guests as well. My understanding is, and please correct me if I'm wrong, that DOMA could have an impact on New Hampshire same-sex couples, because if DOMA were overturned, those couples married under New Hampshire law would suddenly be eligible for federal benefits, tax benefits and so forth.
That's true. Thank you. Yes, thank you for pointing that out. So, yes, as a practical effect, of course, yeah, couples married, recognized as married in New Hampshire would suddenly be treated the same for federal purposes, immigration purposes, tax purposes, all purposes under federal law, as would couples of the opposite sex, married couples of the opposite sex.
And if that same-sex couple traveled to Alabama, and if DOMA were overturned, and no one's saying it's going to be, but would that marriage have to be recognized in Alabama?
No, that's
as they traveled.
That's a different section of DOMA that's not being challenged in this case. That's Section 2 of DOMA, which authorizes states not to recognize marriages, same-sex marriages from other states. This case focuses only on Section 3 of DOMA.
All right, and I think later on in the hour we'll probably get back to this issue of states' rights.
Sure.
So hold on to that thought for just a moment, Professor Grabe. And Jim Splaine is someone who has worked on this issue for a long time. Never mind the legal arguments that we just heard. Jim, what's going through your heart? What's going through your mind this week with all the conversation and all the coverage about this?
Well, I think I think that what goes through my mind most is that it's good to have this discussion. This discussion statewide, this discussion nationally. Because it opens up the thought process for all Americans as to the way that we treat one another. And in my philosophy, there's nothing more important on this planet, nothing more important than the way we treat one another. If we treat each other fairly and equally, we're all going to benefit from that. I think that what David Bates and I found during the past few years debating this, sometimes very intensely on the floor and elsewhere in the state houses, that when we talk about these kinds of issues, we can find an agreement that it is important to treat people fairly. And of course, the majority of the New Hampshire legislature came down on that side.
Yeah, fairly. I and yet you mentioned the idea of common ground. I don't hear a lot of common ground coming out of D.C. right now, Jim Splaine, on this issue.
Well, I think the common ground is that we, in addition to having the discussion, more and more states are adopting marriage equality. We now have 9. When New Hampshire adopted it just 3 years ago, we were the 5th. There's still a lot of other kinds of issues relating to discrimination against gays and lesbians that we have to deal with in the transgender community. You know, in most of this country, you can still be fired just for being gay. You can be refused hire. You can be refused housing in most of the country. Even the federal government does not have a provision in national law of prohibiting discrimination against our gay and lesbian brotherhood. So there's always going to be that kind of march that we have to continue, as well as the fact that 30 states have in their state constitutions prohibition of marriage equality, and many others still have yet to adopt the kind of anti-discrimination laws that New Hampshire adopted in 1997 that Jeannie Shaheen signed. We were the 10th state saying that we cannot discriminate in New Hampshire against people based on sexual orientation. So there's a long fight to continue. The common ground, I think, is going to be that we will eventually resolve that.
David Bates, I want to ask you the same question. And as I said earlier, when you were a state rep, you were primary sponsor of that 2012 bill to, as you put it, return New Hampshire to traditional marriage. We'll get into the details in just a few minutes, but just broadly, David, please, what's going through your mind right now?
Well, it's nice that we could start off on a point of common agreement, and that is, I would agree with Jim that it's good that we're opening this discussion again, and that it is not, as some would like to convince folks, that this is a settled matter in New Hampshire. I don't think that it is. I think that it's depending on what the outcome of these cases are, DOMA and Prop 8 in the Supreme Court, that could bring finality to the whole question. But again, depending on the outcome, this may be an ongoing debate here in New Hampshire. If the results are upholding Prop 8 and the Defense of Marriage Act, that may provide an impetus to a renewed discussion about what the marriage law in New Hampshire ought to be. And so it's good to see that here in the program, your editors saw the merits of bringing this forward to the program this morning. And I hope that the discussion does continue because it certainly is not a settled matter, neither here in New Hampshire nor across the country. And when we look at what the people want, and this is supposed to be a democratic republic of and by and for the people, the overwhelming consensus across the nation when people go to the ballot box and vote and are able to express their views on marriage apart from the pressures of politics and intimidation and accusations of being homophobes and bigots and all those sort of things, people tend to confirm what I think most everybody knows instinctively and intuitively, that marriage should be what it always has been. In its essence, it is the union of a man and a woman, and we should maintain that in the laws and public policy here in New Hampshire and nationwide. And again, as people have had the opportunity to express that in the ballot box, although there's been a few recent cases of the referendums voting in favor of same-sex marriage, we're still at a 10-to-1
ratio in
terms of referendum votes. Statewide votes on marriage are 10-to-1 in favor of traditional marriage.
Right. In terms of states, I should have said it's 40-to-1, right, roughly? No, 30. 40 states.
40 is talking about constitutional amendments and statutes and laws, all of the laws collectively. I was referring to there's 35 states who have actually had referendum votes on the issue of marriage.
I see.
Mostly with respect to constitutional amendments, and so far the tally is 31 voting in favor of traditional marriage, 3 not necessarily supporting same-sex marriage but not affirming traditional marriage, and 1 just left sort of unresolved.
All right. Well, lots more to talk about, and we'll be back in just a minute. The phone number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us a short email if you'd like, exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
This is NHPR 919. Good morning. NHPR reporters keep you connected to New Hampshire every day, all year long. They're voices you recognize and trust to bring you breaking news and developing stories and to explore issues relevant to you. You can stay connected to them on Twitter, too, throughout the day for news updates and more. More of a Granite State take on the national same-sex marriage debate coming up on The Exchange, and then a 10 on The Diane Rehm Show, Understanding International Tax Havens. Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from DeCordova Sculpture Park and Museum in Lincoln, Massachusetts. 30 acres of contemporary art set in an idyllic outdoor landscape, closer than you think. Details at DeCordova.org. And from Bedford Falls Assisted Living and Memory Care, offering a monthly Alzheimer's Caregivers Book Club. A copy of the novel Still Alice may be reserved by calling Bedford Falls at 471-2555. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, a Granite State reaction to the U.S. Supreme Court cases on same-sex marriage being heard this week. We invite you to join us at 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. What's going through your mind, given all the coverage and conversation about these cases, and given New Hampshire's own history on this issue? What outcome do you hope to see from these cases? How do you think they might affect our state? How do you think they might affect our country? Again, give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Post a comment on our Facebook page. One more question for all of you, and then I really want to open up our conversation to our listeners. Jim Splaine, to you first, please. Professor Grabe did a great outline of the two cases that are at hand, one concerning California's Prop 8, ban on same-sex marriage, and also the Federal Defense of Marriage Act, which defines marriage between a man and a woman. Which case do you think, Jim, is more significant for New Hampshire?
Well, both are very important. But I agree that DOMA, the decision on DOMA, is going to be the most relevant because it does affect the rights of and benefits and the recognition by the federal government of the 2,253 marriages, same-gender marriages, that we now have in New Hampshire as of this past week, according to the New Hampshire Bureau of Vital Statistics. That's a lot of New Hampshire residents who are being discriminated against right now. They have half a marriage compared to differently gendered couples who are married in New Hampshire. So the DOMA decision that's going to be discussed today, and these decisions come down within a couple of months, I think that's most relevant.
Yeah, and give us that number again, Jim. That's big, the number of same-sex couples married in New Hampshire.
In New Hampshire, since the law became effective January 1st, 2010, there have been 2,253 same gendered marriages. You know, on this matter, I disagree with David Bates. I think the matter is decided in New Hampshire. And there have been two repeal bills. One in the bill passed that I sponsored in 2009, became effective in 2010. There was a repeal bill in the spring of 2010 that went down to defeat. And then, of course, David Bates' bill last year went down to mega defeat. So I don't think we're going to see the legislature want to revisit this, no matter what happens nationally. I do agree with David that it is an unsettled decision nationally, and that's part of the process of what's going to continue with the dialogue in the next several months and several years.
And David, which do you think is more important or more significant for New Hampshire, the Prop 8 or the DOMA?
Well, you know, let me reiterate again that it's not a settled matter here in New Hampshire any more than the legislation that the legislature will be taking up in just a matter of moments. I'm not sure what time it is, but, you know, the Stand Your Ground legislation, Second Amendment rights issues.
We keep going around and around on these issues,
you're saying. Those and expanded gambling and an income tax and other things that my friend Jim is in favor of, regarding, you know, certain reforms regarding election financing and things like that. There's all kinds of perennial issues that come up in the legislature every year. Why is it that it's only this one that people like Jim want to suggest should summarily be dismissed and is not worthy of continued discussion? Well, I reject that notion. This is still something that is very much open for discussion, and I think that, again, these cases could provide the impetus to renew this debate here in the legislature. As far as which one, I agree with Jim and probably John here that they're equally important. It really just depends on how the justices choose to rule, and particularly if they decide to take the opportunity with either case to invent a new fundamental right to same-sex marriage, which currently does not exist.
All right. Again, our number here in the exchange is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. And Carol's waiting in Grantham. Hey, Carol, thanks for hanging on. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Thank you. I guess the issue that I see as central to these discussions is whether or not we as a nation should begin to have to allow the electorate, whether it's legislative or the general public, to withdraw or prohibit specific groups of people within our society from having a civil right, such as the right to marry. It seems to me that this puts us on a very seriously bad path. For example, the people that are solidly behind DOMA are also continuing to push for an amendment to our Constitution that would embed that particular line of legal thinking into the Constitution itself.
Okay. Carol, thank you for calling in. Professor Grabe, talking about DOMA and messing around with the Constitution, what do you think?
Well, I think Carol's observation, I think, is, I mean, she's making an argument against something, but I would say that just history bears out that it is rare. It is rare in our history for a right to be recognized and then subsequently withdrawn. The usual trajectory is that once a new liberty is recognized of whatever sort, it's very, very difficult to take that away either by legislation or by the amendment process. I mean, think about prohibition, for example. That's a counterexample to what I just said. I mean, a certain liberty was deprived. It didn't hold for long. I think that's the essence of what Carol is saying, is that once a new liberty has been recognized, there's something funny about withdrawing it. And that's really the heart of the Ninth Circuit's decision in the Proposition 8 case. Their decision was narrow, that once marriage had been recognized, there's no basis for withdrawing that other than negative animus towards a particular group. And that's not rational. That's not within our constitutional tradition.
Let's take another call. Thank you for that one, Carol. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Brian's waiting in Dover. Hi, Brian. You're on The Exchange. Go ahead.
Hi. I just have two quick questions. First, if marriage has always been a states' rights issue, then I don't understand how DOMA doesn't infringe the states' rights aspect. But on a second point, if one of the proponents against gay marriage continue to say, well, civil unions is the same as marriage, then why is any state, in a position to issue marriage licenses? Because when you think of marriage, you think of church. Why doesn't every state just issue civil union certificates to everyone? And then if you want to get married in a church or however, have at it.
Yes.
Wouldn't that place everybody on equal footing?
I see. So if I had a heterosexual marriage, that would also be a civil union, Brian. And then if I wanted to make it a marriage, I'd go to church.
Well, as soon as you think of marriage, the first thought that pops into your mind is not necessarily a judge standing up in front of somebody giving them the marriage speech or the civil union speech. Everyone thinks of a church, big white dress, the whole nine yards. I don't understand why states are in the marriage business. They should be in a civil union business, because at the end of the day, from a state's point of view, it's a contract.
Okay. Brian, two great points that I had wanted to raise anyway, so thank you very much. First of all, guys, the word marriage itself versus civil unions. David Bates, your bill addressed that issue last year. Remind us how.
Well, again, the essence of my bill was to return to the traditional meaning, the traditional definition of marriage, which, as I said earlier, marriage in its essence is the union of a man and a woman. That's what marriage always has been. And, I disagree with the caller regarding the word marriage necessarily conjuring up the notion of church and religion and that sort of thing. And the question of why does the state have any interest in marriage, that's exactly what the supporters of Prop 8 are arguing before the Supreme Court, the very reason why the state, and perhaps the only reason why the state has an interest in marriage or anybody's relationship at all, is because of the obvious biological reality that the union of a man and a woman, the typical outcome is the production of a new life, and that affects all of society. That's what the rational and even the compelling interest that the state has in regulating marriage. And so it has nothing to do necessarily with religious beliefs and contracts and all that sort of thing. The state has a very real interest in the sexual relationships of men and women, particularly within the context of the historical understanding of marriage, because that's the primary means through which society is propagated. And apart from that, the state really has no reason to have any interest in people's interpersonal relationships or sexual activity. It's only because of the connection between the union of a couple and the procreative potential of the union of a man and a woman.
And the children issue came up yesterday a lot.
Sure.
And I want to ask you about that, David Bates. But first, let's deal with the wording issue that our caller raises and that was also raised yesterday in Jim Splaine. This came up before the U.S. Supreme Court yesterday. Chief Justice Roberts said, talking about civil unions versus marriage, he said the only difference is a label. How do you feel about that? And what do you think about Brian's proposal? Make all unions civil unions, and then if you want to get married in the church, you know, go ahead.
Well, labels are important. The word marriage is important. I was primary sponsor also of the 2007 the civil unions bill that David Bates ended up later wanting to go back to, although he opposed it along with many Republicans, or mostly Republicans, in 2007. And the idea of civil unions is not a bad concept when it comes to benefits. What the law did was, and this language was in the bill, that all of the same rights, responsibilities, and obligations which are otherwise given to other married couples would be given to same-gendered couples, but it still wasn't a marriage. And the word marriage does indeed mean a lot. And we're not going to be abolishing all of the state laws that deal with marriage throughout this country. I mean, it's not a bad concept to have civil unions and then you go to church or wherever to get a different kind of a marriage. But they do a lot of that in Europe. But in the United States, we have marriage laws. So dealing with that, and I think the attitudes that we've seen are changing indeed, we have to find ways to make that those marriage laws equal. You know, David really does not need to worry. People who are gay and lesbian are not going to take all of the marriage licenses. Many marriages do not end in children, but we don't see the states denying marriage licenses to people who either don't want children or are not going to have children. This is about an important concept of marriage, sharing one's love and commitment with and to one another until death do you part.
Yeah.
I think that's a wonderful thing to celebrate.
And go ahead,
Laura,
real quickly, David Bates.
If I could just jump in,
I
want to point out that Jim talks about one thing when he's in a context like this, trying to sway public opinion regarding marriage. He talks about the love and the relationship, and very often coaxing it in terms of fairness and equality and all those sort of things. But when you look at what he legislates, it's very different. Okay, the definition of marriage contains nothing to do with the emotional arguments that he's advancing right now. And so to me, the fundamental question comes back to what is marriage in its essence? And the fact of the matter is, throughout our state statutes and federal law, it exists in hundreds of places. And so if the word marriage is there, we need to have a definition of for it. And what is the definition of marriage going to be? That's really the bottom line of what this debate is all about. Because if we accept the traditional, longstanding meaning of the plain meaning of the word, the union of a man and woman, then the arguments about equality go away. Because marriage equality has always existed. If you accept the plain meaning of the word marriage, people in same-sex unions just choose to not be married by virtue of selecting a same-sex partner.
I want to jump in real quickly for you also, Professor Graby. Our caller, Brian, mentioned states' rights. How do you see states' rights playing out in these two cases? This has also come up a lot. Brian, thank you for the call. Good issues.
Oh, sure. It's true. I mean, marriage has traditionally been left to the states. The definition of marriage, the requirements for getting married, it's always been understood to be a states' rights issue. The first question that Brian asked was, well, then how does DOMA even exist? I mean, why did Congress see fit to define marriage? I think it's accepted that it was constitutional for Congress to do that because it defined it for purposes of federal benefits. And so if Congress is going to be making benefits available to people and using marriage as a proxy, and there are different definitions of marriage out there, it's within Congress's prerogative to do that. Whether it's wise, that's a separate question, but I think it's constitutional for Congress to have done that. More generally, the question of states' rights often comes up in civil rights litigation. The question is, yes, the states have under our 10th Amendment, have the prerogative to regulate broadly. The question raised in this case, though, is whether there is a federal right that limits the state's ability to make choices. And you know, those challenging these laws say there are two federal rights that are implicated. The first is the right to equal protection, and the second is this fundamental right to marry. It's not listed anywhere in the Constitution, but it's always been recognized to be an important liberty that's incorporated into this idea of due process that the federal Constitution does protect, not only against the federal government, but also against the states.
Wow. So states' rights, a huge, huge part of this conversation, it seems like. I've heard a lot about that this morning. Let's take another call if we could. This is Sally waiting in Brookline, Vermont. Hi, Sally. You're on The Exchange. Go ahead. Thanks for calling in.
Hi. I just wanted to address the civil rights issue. I hear people calling gay marriage a civil rights issue all the time, but I just don't. I don't see that. If someone's black, they're black. They can't change that. If someone is, but people don't have to have sex. You don't have a right to marriage or to sex. And there are lots of people who are restricted from being married. You know, family members can't marry each other. So it's not just a given that people can be married because everybody supposedly can be married. They can't.
Okay.
We have rules and regulations on those things.
Sally, thank you for calling in. Jim Splain, this is another issue that has come up. There isn't a right for just anybody to marry, as Sally points out. What do you think about her thought there?
Well, I think there is a right, and I think, unfortunately, and we haven't talked about this in this program yet, the attitudes not only statewide but nationally are changing on this a lot. A great deal. You know, just 10 years ago in New Hampshire, about a third of the our citizens thought that marriage equality was an okay thing to do. When we first talked about civil unions in 2007, it was probably divided close to 50-50. When more people opposed to marriage equality than not. So we got civil unions. In 2009, there was certainly diverse opinion, but now the polls are in the vicinity of 70%. Three recent referendums in Maine and Maryland and Washington state this past November showed acceptance of marriage equality, and they adopted laws for that. Nationwide, we've seen that the percentages are ranging from 55% to 60% in favor of marriage equality nationwide, and that includes the South, where there remains considerable opposition.
Okay.
So the attitudes are changing.
Jim, we're going to go to a super short break. Sally, thank you for that call. The number for you to join us, 1-800-892-6477. And since you raised it, Jim Splain, coming out of the break, I would like to ask you all more about the timeline of this, public opinion. We'll keep taking your calls, too, at 1-800-892-6477.
This is NHPR, where support comes from UR members and from CGI Business Solutions, partnering with businesses in all aspects of HR, helping companies stay compliant and protected. Online at cgibenefitsgroup.com. And from Newburyport 5-Cent Savings Bank, opening soon in Portsmouth with full-service banking and career opportunities. Information online at newburyportbank.com/careers. Good morning, it's 9:40. This is NHPR. Alex Ray, owner of The Common Man and NHPR underwriter.
Way back, probably over 15 years ago, I supported NHPR because I personally liked it. Today, I support it because the public actually says to me, I like doing business with The Common Man because you support my love, which is NHPR. And that's enough for me to believe that we're getting a very good return on our contribution.
Find out how you can become an NHPR underwriter by visiting the support page at nhpr.org.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're talking about same-sex marriage in light of the U.S. Supreme Court cases being heard this week. We're getting a reaction here in the Granite State, and let's hear from you. 1-800-892-6477. Given that New Hampshire is a same-sex marriage state, and given that the Supreme Court has been looking at these, there's been so much coverage, what's going through your mind with all this going on? What outcome do you hope to see from these cases? What do you think the impact might be on New Hampshire? Call in 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. All of you, before we go back to our listeners, I wanted to raise with you, David Bates, something that Jim Splaine said, the timeline of this. This came up yesterday, too, in the Supreme Court hearing. The justices seemed to say, whoa, this is really fast. Justice Kennedy said, we have 5 years of information, meaning on same-sex marriage, to weigh against 2,000 years of history or more. What do you think about that, David Bates?
The impression that I got is that the justices are very hesitant to make the kind of final declaratory judgment that a lot of people would like to see. There was a lot of questions having to do with the, you know, for the purposes of radio listeners, very uninteresting subject about standing.
Should we even be talking about this?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, they could take the opportunity to, on a sort of on a legal technicality, just not even weigh in really on the underlying merits that everybody's really wanting to hear. You know, what the Supreme Court's position on the definition of marriage is going to be. I'm not sure we're going to get an answer with the kind of finality that we would like to see. I think that this may wind up continuing to be an ongoing debate. And as you suggested, there does seem to be a reluctance to weigh in with this sort of a decision. So we'll have to wait and see. I suspect it's more likely we're going to get something midway rather than a complete win for one side or the other.
Yeah, and two quick legal questions for you, Professor Grabe, and then we'll go back to our listeners. One is, David Bates is absolutely right. There was a lot of talk from the justices yesterday about should we even be looking at this. If they're wondering that now, I mean, aren't they the ones who decide whether to take these cases or not?
They are. Four justices, when the Proposition 8 case came before them, four justices thought it was important to take, and that's the rule. Four justices out of the nine vote to take the case.
I see. Okay.
They take the case. I don't know whether Justice Kennedy had voted to take the case and was regretting his vote or whether, you know, he had opposed taking the case all along, but he did express some reservations about that yesterday.
And Jim Splaine also mentioned public opinion, and certainly the polls that you see do show American public opinion shifting even among those groups of people where traditionally they've opposed same-sex marriage. How much do those nine justices, Professor Grabe, really give a hoot about public opinion?
That's such a big question. We could do a whole show on that question. I mean, on the one hand, it's a law court. It's supposed to be interpreting a legal document. On the other hand, I think that history is clear that when the court gets out in front of public opinion too fast or lags behind it too far, it does damage to its prestige as an institution. I'd love to talk more about that. I know time is short, but I think that the short answer is the court is acutely aware of public opinion and sometimes exercises what has been called the passive virtues, ducking issues in circumstances where they feel that it's not yet appropriate for them to speak as a matter of constitutional law.
Yeah, and Jim Splaine, if you could address that too, real briefly, again, this sense that you got from some justices yesterday that this is too fast.
It's hard to read anything into the kinds of questions that Supreme Court justices or even legislators at public hearings ask. Sometimes it's leading questions to try to bolster their own thought process. You know, the Supreme Court has been dramatic in some of the decisions in the past. In that famous 1967 interracial marriage case, when about 10% of the American public was in favor of interracial marriage, the Supreme Court said that the state of Virginia could not prohibit interracial marriage in their state. And it wasn't until the late 1980s and early 1990s that a majority of Americans began to support interracial marriage. Now it's around 90%. So it takes a while sometimes, but the Supreme Court makes its decision based on a variety of factors.
All right. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange at nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. Here's a Facebook comment from Jeff. He says, I think the institution of marriage is evolving to celebrate the idea of love instead of the concepts of wealth, and power and property, which historically has been its claim to fame. And Jeff, I guess I would add to that children. There was a lot of talk about that yesterday. That's for you, I think, David Bates. You were talking earlier about this definition of marriage and how important that is. Jeff is saying this definition, this institution, as he puts it, is evolving. What do you think?
People's opinions regarding marriage and same-sex relationships may be evolving, but the essence of the institution remains the same. And if marriage is redefined so that it is no longer the union of a man and a woman, it has, in its essence, been altered in a way that I would say would put in question whether the state has any interest in it whatsoever at all, because you see the comment there reverting back to the sort of things that Jim does with respect to making an emotional argument and talking about love and all those sort of things. The government has no interest in that sort of thing. Romance and affection and all that sort of, there's nothing about that in any marriage statute anywhere in the country. And although that's important in people's minds, what we need to do, really, I guess, to bring some clarity to this is point out the difference between the elements of marriage that are important to individuals in their interpersonal relationships. And what's really at stake here with this whole discussion legally is about the state's interest in marriage. And those are two very, very different things. And so when people, and this is probably why people's opinions have evolved so much on marriage, because they're focusing on something different than the essence of what marriage is and the legal ramifications of that. And getting back to something that John said, and we hear a lot about, the Supreme Court's previous cases that have said that marriage is a fundamental right. I don't dispute that whatsoever at all. I agree with that wholeheartedly, but it is in the context of the traditional understanding of what of marriage being the union of a man and a woman.
We keep getting back to that definitional
Absolutely.
Issue. All right. Well, thanks for the Facebook comment, Jeff. And let's go back to the phones if we could. Virginia's waiting in Aetna. Hi, Virginia. You're on The Exchange. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for having me on. This is my first time calling. Many are speaking about the fundamental right to marry. And I'm wondering how you square that with the equality and the right to in the pursuit of happiness.
I'm not sure what your point is, Virginia. Can you elaborate a little bit on that?
Well, it just seems to me that whether or not marriage brings happiness to a couple, people should still have the right to pursue it.
Okay. And constitutional stuff, John Grabe, and getting back to some of those things that we hold dear, founding principles. Thank you for calling, Virginia. Do you want to comment on that at all?
Well, just, I mean, I would use that maybe as occasion to say, the idea that a previous caller had raised the question of, separating out marriage entirely from the government, keeping marriage a religious term and having civil unions across the board. And I think a lot of people see a lot of sense in that proposal. The problem is our historical tradition, which goes back to the founding. As we know, we say that we have a separation of church and state, but the history is much more complicated than that. There's always been an intertwining of the institution of marriage and the state, as in other respects we've had, involvement, religious involvement in civic life.
Well, I've got a couple of Facebook comments, too, here that I don't have time to read, but that also ask questions surrounding separation of church and state from Sarah, from Bernadette. So thank you for those comments. Again, it's another big topic in this. I want to turn just briefly with you all from the legal aspects of this and how we feel about it in New Hampshire to some of the politics of this. And Jim Splaine, to you, what about political backlash? Those who oppose gay marriage have been saying that if the court does establish a broad right to same-sex marriage, and that's by no means certain, you'll see a political backlash, an uprising of conservatives in those many states that don't allow gay marriage, that, this could be more problematic for your side than you think. What do you think?
Well, as I said at the beginning of this program, I'll agree with David that the discussion continues. He observed that this might not be a settled matter in New Hampshire. I believe it is, but it is fact that our rights as human beings are really only guaranteed until the next election. The next election in New Hampshire comes in 78 weeks, in just 19 months. It's not very long between now and November of 2014 when people will go to the ballot box. This is certainly going to continue to be an issue, not only here in New Hampshire, but more so nationwide. Those 30 states that have constitutional provisions prohibiting marriage equality, no matter what the courts do, those probably continue to stand unless the court were to do something very dramatic. And there's going to be debates in many of those states to repeal some of those provisions. There's going to be other states where efforts will be made to adopt marriage equality if it's not prohibited yet by the Constitution. So this is an important issue that's going to be discussed at the ballot box and by candidates right through the 2016 New Hampshire First in the Nation presidential primary. I think we're going to see Democrats and Republicans discussing this, and that's a good thing.
David Bates, I read in the Telegraph of Nashua this morning that you plan another repeal effort on this. Is that correct?
I'm not sure where that came from.
Then let me rephrase it. Where do you see yourself as someone who's been active on this issue going next?
I guess that article just proves you can't believe everything that you read. Obviously, I would need to be in the legislature again
right.
to spearhead another effort to change back to traditional marriage. I wouldn't rule out that possibility, but I'm not counting the weeks to the next election like Jim is. if I do, it'll be of it'll be a difficult decision, and it's a lot of time and sacrifice to serve in the legislature. So I'll consider it, but I am nowhere near making a decision like that at this point in time.
What do you think, though, about the idea that, let's say the court goes all the way, says, yes, there's a fundamental right to same-sex marriage. What does that do to your side of the argument? Does that energize that side to fight again, or does that deflate the side and go, okay, well, I guess we're done with this?
It would probably have each of those effects, but on different people. There'll be some that will just, you know, throw up their hands and say, well, I guess it's over. There'll be others, I think, that will be more energized to pursue the only redress available at that point, and that is with a federal constitutional amendment. And that has been in the works over the years, obviously a much more difficult thing to obtain, but certainly not beyond the realm of possibility when you consider that 30 states have voted to amend their constitutions to protect marriage. And if those states did the same in a ratification, then a federal constitutional amendment is within the realm of possibility,
well,
if it could ever get through Congress.
Now that's something we haven't seen in a long time. Huh?
Sure.
I mean, it's hard enough to get a constitutional amendment in New Hampshire. Federally, it's huge.
Absolutely.
Although, as a lot of people have said this hour, Professor Graby, doesn't seem like a lot of scholars are expecting the Supreme Court to say broadly yay or nay. It seems like they'll carve a sort of narrow and perhaps rocky path when they decide on these cases.
Well, you know, that's what the court watchers are inferring from the judge's questions yesterday. But, you know, we know from the Affordable Care Act case last year that, you know, the consensus after that was going down. And then we got a surprise decision. There are clearly four justices, I think, who are prepared to recognize same-gender marriages nationally. Only one more is needed. Justice Kennedy is the one in the middle. He has been the author of the court's two most important gay rights decisions. If he were to go with those other four, and if the court were able to navigate around questions of standing, who knows? It's not likely. But it's not impossible in my mind.
Yeah. Okay. So let's just look at some of the possible scenarios as we get ready for this decision coming out in June, Professor Graby. Prop 8 from California first. If the Supreme Court says, yes, California, you know, Prop 8 is unconstitutional, people do have the right to gay marriage in California, how does that come out for the rest of us? Does that pretty much say, all right, California's settled, but everybody else in every other state just kind of goes the way they've always gone?
Is there
anything more broad than regarding California?
They would have two choices in giving the reasoning why Proposition 8 is unconstitutional. If they gave a broader rationale saying it's unconstitutional because there's a fundamental right to marry or it violates the equal protection rights of same-sex couples, That would mean that same-sex marriage is obligatory nationally.
That sweeps the country.
That's right.
And that's huge.
That would be huge. They also could uphold the Ninth Circuit's decision to strike down Prop 8 on narrower grounds, saying that it's unconstitutional once the institution has been recognized to take it away. That was the essence of the Ninth Circuit's ruling. That would be a narrower ruling. That would apply only to California.
I see.
And then a third thing they could do is simply not reach the merits of the case at all on grounds of standing or on grounds of second thoughts, you know, that they shouldn't have taken the case. It's too early, as Justice Kennedy toyed with yesterday during
the
oral
argument. That'd be disappointing to all these people who are watching this, you know, say something.
That's right. And then, of course, they could also reverse the Ninth Circuit. That's, you know, what the petitioners are seeking in the case, and reinstate Proposition 8. Again, reading the tea leaves, I don't think many expect that result after the justices' reactions yesterday. But again, you never know.
And real quickly, Professor Graby, it's DOMA. Seems like there it's a little easier to understand. It's not such a states' rights. It's sort of federal marital benefits to everybody or not?
Yeah, I think there are fewer options for the court in DOMA, though in that case also there is a standing issue there as well. The court could decide that it doesn't have standing to decide that case as well. Interestingly, in both cases, governmental authorities are not defending the law. In California, the administration is not defending the constitutionality of Prop 8. And the Obama administration is not defending the constitutionality of DOMA.
All right. Well, Professor Graby, thank you for coming in. We really appreciate it.
Well, thank you for having me.
That's John Graby, professor at the UNH School of Law, where he teaches constitutional law, among other subjects. Jim Splaine, good to have you. Thank you for being with us this hour.
Same here. Nice talking with all of you.
Jim Splaine, former Democratic state representative and senator from Portsmouth and primary sponsor of the House bill which legalized same-sex marriage here in the Granite State. And David Bates, thank you also for taking the time for us this morning.
Thank you. Great to be here.
David Bates, former Republican representative from Windham, primary sponsor of a 2012 bill to return, as he says, New Hampshire to traditional marriage. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producer is Ellen Grimm. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our intern is Faith Meixel. The Exchange executive producer is Keith Shields. And I'm Laura Kanoy.